It's the Pop-Matic Podcast for April 15th, 2015, and...
Take me out to the ball game.
Really, that's all we care. Something so sad right now.
Something, something, Cracker Jack, something, something, hot dog.
The Pop-Matic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and hanging out with me today are
Mike,
Amanda,
Sarah.
What?
Holy crap!
I'm back.
We found her.
All right.
I snuck in.
If other people aren't here, I don't know anything about that. Friday, April 17th is the Nashville Sounds opening game, the first game in their new stadium, appropriately enough named the First Tennessee Park. Versus the Colorado Springs Sky Sox.
Oh, that makes no sense. My brain hurt, can't compute how you wear socks made of sky.
You're into comic books? Sky Sox.
They do it overseas. It's okay.
The Silver Surfer? I don't know.
There's also a mascot called the Isotopes, the Albuquerque Isotopes.
But that's a Simpsons reference. I can understand that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Los Alamos.
So before we go down this baseball rabbit hole, or maybe we already have,
ooh,
today's show.
Mascot talk. That can be fun.
Today's show, if we haven't figured it out, is all about.
Baseball?
Now you stop talking. Baseball.
Blurs ball?
This is the baseball podcast today. Go Sounds. Sarah.
Woohoo, yes. So baseball, which, you know, of course, the first game in the MLB has already occurred. I watched that. Yes, yes. Though I am no expert on the topic of baseball, I am a fan of the sport. So I'll give you my two cents as best as I can. My teams are the St. Louis Cardinals, Nashville Sounds, of course. Yeah, yeah. And Vandy. If you don't know, Vandy won its first College World Series championship last year. I also used to work at the Sounds Stadium during the summers of my college years, so that was a pretty fun experience. It was also fun for the baseball games because of the shenanigans that would sometimes occur while working there. Stuff like getting bored during a day game, so you decide to broadcast Michael Bolton on the radio throughout the park.
Yeah.
Fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can get bored.
He rocks the house.
Really does. Michael Bolton.
Raise the roof.
That's right.
Trying to think of Michael Bolton song and I'm blanking.
Okay. Yeah, it'll stuck in your head all day if you actually succeed. So.
When a man loves a woman, can't keep his mind on nothing else. He takes the world for the good things found.
But because the Sounds are finally receiving a new home, and the days of Greer are no more, I'd like to pay tribute to the old stadium that holds many fine memories. I'll try to keep this quick and not boring. The Sounds played their first game at Herschel Greer Stadium in 1978. Originally built to stand only 30 years, the stadium has seen many historic games, many famous major league players, many fireworks, and one iconic guitar-shaped scoreboard. Sadly, that scoreboard is not following them to the new park, but it is being replicated instead. My brother really hoped to take that guitar home himself, but not sure it could have fit in his car.
That's half the fun.
Yeah, I know, that would have... Well, so the stadium is also home to other events outside of Sounds baseball. My alma mater, Father Ryan, used to play their home football games there prior to building their own football stadium. Belmont's baseball team also played there at one time. The stadium once hosted the Jeff Fisher and Friends charity softball game. Many Titans players were involved in that. It also hosted the City of Hope Celebrity Softball Challenge of the CMA Festival. Several country music stars graced the field's presence during that event. I will also recall Willie Nelson having a concert there. Greer Stadium was and is a special place that will be missed. I hope the land gets repurposed properly. With the new home at First Tennessee Park in downtown Nashville, the Sounds will hopefully once again see the attendance numbers like the good old days. The ground the new stadium sits on is rich with history, having previously been Sulphurdale, the home to the Nashville Vols minor league baseball team. It was also discovered that the ground was previously home to a major Indian civilization thousands of years ago. And to wrap this long rant up, Nashville has a strong connection with baseball, whether it be from Sulphurdale, the Sounds, the Vandy baseball team, and other colleges, or all the smaller baseball leagues around the city. Do yourself a favor and see a baseball game this summer. You won't regret it.
Can I ask a stupid girl girl question. Go so, like, it. Where's the new stadium?
I don't know. Is it north?
It is. It is
okay.
Right next to the Bicentennial Mall. If you go over to the Capitol, mm-hmm. stand on the hill that looks over the Bicentennial Mall, look immediately to your right, and you will see the guitar. Okay.
I was just going to say I'm disappointed that Wright Field doesn't have a hill in it, just like the old Sulphur Dell Stadium, which it was famous for. It was, like, small, and Wright Field was on a hill. It's, wow. like, notorious in the history of baseball. Editor's note, the original Sulphur Dell baseball field was demolished in 1969. The last Vols game was played there in 1963. So, Amanda.
Well, I booed Sarah earlier because if I have to pick any team, I would have to be a Cubs fan. And, yes, yeah.
Go Buccos.
But the Cubs haven't done anything since 1908, so we're still kind of waiting on life. So while you're waiting, I have a book to recommend, and it's long, so that's good because it's going to be a while. I don't know that 2015 is our year, but I'm going to talk about The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach. This is his debut novel. It came out in 2011. It got pretty good reviews. The story is set around a cast of characters, not just one. The linchpin is kind of Henry Scrimshaw. He is a shortstop. Well, he ends up becoing a shortstop for the Westish Harpooners. That's a small college in northeastern Wisconsin. And it's about his struggles as a ball player, with his teammates, what happens with the president of the university and his family. And it just kind of revolves around all these different characters and during a course of a college career. And Henry's really good. He doesn't make a lot of errors until one day he has a small mishap and then, you know, the wheels fall off. I kind of pulled a Brian, and that's the point I'm at now, so their wheels
so
are just
far,
coming off.
Wow, feature correction, the ending is terrible.
That's right.
Worst book ever. I would have thrown it in the fire if I had checked it out from the library.
The first 200 pages, yay! The last 200 pages, sad. But I did do my, you know, reporter on the ground, you know, find out what the people think of this book for you, and they were mostly positive. My volunteer, Linda, she read about 100 pages, and she's like, then I kind of stopped. She's like, I didn't really hate it, but I just kind of stopped, which I can kind of see. It is fairly complex. Then my good friend Lori, who works downstairs in cataloging, she absolutely loved it, and I think she's the first one that told me that she liked it, and she's kind of the reason that I picked it. Because Lori reads smart people books, so if she liked it, it had to be good. And then I also, I had it on the elevator with me and ran into Allison, who runs our Limitless Libraries department. And she said, oh my gosh, I finished that book, and that's the only book I've ever wanted. I just started back over reading it again. I loved it so much. So I can see that. It is really good. It is really dense. If you're just looking for a good book about baseball, I'm not sure that this would be the one. Because it's not, like, baseball is just kind of the setting. It's not the focus of the book. But I am liking it. I will finish it, and then we can chat about the last 200 pages. But The Art of Fielding, good book.
Kyle, who helped make our website work, he really wanted to get our book club to read that book, and he was unsuccessful, but he loved it too.
Yeah, your book club would like it.
So Mike, what's happening on your end of the baseball stadium?
Well, I guess I'd have to say I'm a Braves fan, the team that's losing his team to make it to the World Series.
At least they made it to the World Series.
Yeah, like four times and choked.
We're still waiting.
Maybe they'll win someday. But anyway, I found the only sport that really likes to stay my interest is sumo wrestling. Yeah. One grotesque fat dude pushes another bloated fat dude out of a ring in less than a minute. More time is spent on ESPN 8, the Ochos, interstitial graphics, than actual matches. Yeah.
Wait, that's an actual channel?
No.
I was going to say, that would be awesome if it was.
That's a dodgeball reference.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this year's annual Las Vegas International Dodgeball Open, brought to you exclusively here on ESPN 8, the Ocho. We're coming to you live from the Las Vegas University Learning Annex.
Okay.
Dodgeball. The Ocho. But buoys make anything more dramatic, from orchid thievery to inventing windshield wipers. So I tried to buoys this week for some baseball recommendations. Oh, boy. But since I haven't seen Field of Durhams or Bull Dreams, I have...
Those are my favorite.
I have seen a little Oscar contender from 2011 where Amanda's book's from.
Must have been the year of baseball.
Right. Yeah, nothing's happened the past 4 years, I guess. Called Moneyball, starring Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. Pitt stars as Billy Bean, the general manager of the Oakland A's. At the beginning of the film, Bean is having trouble replacing some star players due to Oakland's limited finances, but he soon meets Peter Brand, played by Jonah Hill, a young accountant for the Cleveland Indians, who is a proponent for using statistics to assess a player's worth, which was kind of amusing because earlier in the film they showed that baseball scouts apparently find players based on the way they walk or their wife's attractiveness and not how they actually play the game. All that kind of superstition stuff. Brand believes a player should be chosen on based on their on-base percentage, which I'm sure Sarah knows what that means. I don't.
Percentage of time they're actually on base.
I think so. Sounds good.
Break that down for you.
I think it'll work. There's also something called sabermetrics, but apparently Wikipedia was torn as to whether that was, actually used or not. And Brand selects three otherwise uninteresting players, including a newly buffed Chris Pratt as an injured Scott Hattiesburg.
Chris Pratt was a skinny guy before.
He was a fat dude on Parks and Rec in the early seasons, and then he... Yeah, and then he, buffed out.
Serious thick neck muscle head.
No, he's a big fat dude, and then he buffed out for this in Zero Dark 30. Good for him. He was originally a catcher, I believe, but he's being recruited as first baseman, and there's this whole, oh, I don't know if I can play first base. Ah, you totally can do it. Ah, go team.
First base is scary.
I guess. Mm-hmm.
They throw things at you at first base.
Yeah.
The only first base I know is kind of sexy. At first, the team fares rather poorly, but eventually wins an astounding 20 games in a row. Ooh, and they even make it to the postseason. Oh, but will they go on to the World Series? I can't tell you. I liked the movie a lot at the time. I especially liked the portrait of Bean as a man who doesn't seem to realize his own worth and subconsciously sabotages great opportunities. Because apparently he was originally a baseball player himself, but, when he got drafted and actually started playing the game, he did really badly. And they kind of make it like it's a psychological thing, he just couldn't handle it. So that was an interesting portrait.
I think there's a lot of that in baseball, because that's kind of my story, too. It's all the psychologicalness of baseball, because there's not a physical game so much as you get inside your own head, and they're all very superstitious.
Interesting.
There's a lot of waiting.
Yeah. Pondering.
That's why there's a lot of literary tradition about baseball and golf in American letters, because there's a lot of just
sitting and
pace the same.
Since I knew nothing of the athletics in 2002, I was on the edge of my seat, hoping that this ragtag team of misfits makes it a big game. Oh, wow. And according to the amazingly trustworthy site Wikipedia, it is considered mostly accurate, too.
Because it was based on a true story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Based on a book that I have not read, so I cannot verify, but I've heard it's good.
As far as I know, though, no team using the Moneyball system has won the World Series.
Oh.
And there's going to be a future correction or not. But
and I know they said that the Red Sox apparently embraced it and got pretty far, but I don't know if they won.
Well, they have won in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Brian will make corrections as necessary. Right. Now,
first baseman, Johnny No Brain.
Editor's note, since the publication of Moneyball, the book by Michael Lewis, and the success of the Oakland A's under this system, many MLB teams have integrated so-called sabermetrics into their evaluation of players, notably the Boston Red Sox, who have since won a number of World Series. Suck it, Yankees.
People that aren't in the studio, we pretend they don't exist, but considering the slaying of the beautiful game of baseball that Mike has done, I have to give shout outs to Bill, who loves baseball.
Loves. Hardcore.
Let's not bring that up this episode.
He loves the Braves. And actually, now we should have planned better. We should have just dissed it. It should have been a baseball diss episode since Bill wasn't here.
All of shame.
So Bill loves baseball, and I'm sure he would have had a lot to say today. And also, Jeremy loves baseball. And Jeremy is actually in a band that recorded an all baseball themed album, pop punk band.
Huh.
And it was mostly about the Chicago Cubs, but there were other
Was it
songs
a tragic too. Rock opera? I think and then we choked again.
It was
choked again.
I don't know if he wants me to link to it or not, but they are funny pop punk songs about baseball. So I apologize.
State of Green Day, it's opening day.
Yeah. So Jeremy and Bill, I apologize. but I'm gonna pretty much go the way the route that Mike did. So a geek called Arms. On the day that we're going to talk about baseball, I'm somehow going to relate it to Star Trek. So many Star Trek fans, they were disappointed that the captain of Next Generation was an old white guy with a French name and an English accent.
I found that bizarre.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Still the best captain ever. Just throwing that out
there. We live in a world where Kirk exists.
Well, I think a lot of people...
Swim.
Because of the history of Star Trek and the Gene Roddenberry's, goals for the show, really would have been happy if there would have been a black captain. But when Deep Space Nine happened, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, we finally had our black captain. That was Captain Benjamin Sisko, played by Avery Brooks, okay? Here's the premise for the show. He has to command a space station that was recently liberated. So there are these two factions, and he's part of the Federation, who are the good guys in Star Trek. He has to come and command this space station and make peace amongst the warring factions and be neutral. And to make it even better, a wormhole opens up near the space station that is like a portal to the other side of the galaxy. So then everyone in the galaxy is interested in this place, and he has to be the leader that makes it all work harmoniously. That's the cross that he bears. But Captain Sisko's solace is baseball. And therefore, there are baseball-themed episodes. He keeps a baseball on his desk. It becomes a very famous prop in the show. The baseball appears and disappears in various episodes. Whenever he ponders the way starship captains do, he's often holding his baseball. Okay. So, like, baseball is, like, this really big deal in this character on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Aggressive. Adversarial.
Competition. For fun. It's a game that Jake and I play on the holodeck. It's called baseball.
Baseball? What is this?
I was afraid you'd ask that. I throw this ball to you, and this other player stands between us with a bat, a stick, and he tries to hit the ball in between these two white lines. The rules aren't important. What's important is it's linear. Every time I throw this ball, 100 different things can happen in a game. He might swing and miss. He might hit it. The point is, you never know. You try to anticipate. Set a strategy for all the possibilities as best you can. But in the end, it comes down to throwing one pitch after another and seeing what happens. With each new consequence, the game begins to take shape.
And you have no idea what that shape is until it is completed.
That's right. In fact, the game wouldn't be worth playing if we knew what was going to happen.
Double shame that Jeremy isn't here. Deep Space Nine is Jeremy's favorite Star Trek. But I'm gonna
future rant.
But I'm gonna I'm gonna steal all his thunder today. If you don't like Star Trek and you just want to go in, I mean, actually, Star Trek Deep Space Nine is probably one for you. It is darker than the other Star Treks. Its themes are about war and diplomacy. And I think The Next Generation was like more for a family show for kids. It was more episodic. And I think because Deep Space Nine was set in one place, there could be far more character arcs. And there's a lot more like ongoing stories and character development than the other Star Trek shows, including the character of Captain Sisko. And one of the writers for Star Trek Deep Space Nine was Ronald Moore, who later went on to do Battlestar Galactica. In a lot of ways, Star Trek Deep Space Nine was pregame for Battlestar Galactica. A lot of the same themes are there, especially working in religion into sci-fi, which a lot of people don't like. But the character of Captain Sisko really has to deal with a lot of religious issues, like in himself, in the show. And that, again, is brought up in Battlestar Galactica. And at least one episode, Iggy Pop plays alien. So Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that's my baseball pick. Makes sense to me.
I could have picked that Futurama episode with Lawrence Ball.
You totally could. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do on the Tickle My Fancy segment?
We tickle Mike.
Stop it, you guys.
Then we talk about stuff we like.
All right. Ooh. Hey, listeners, if you haven't noticed, I still haven't figured out a good tagline for Tickle My Fancy segment.
Someday.
I'm hoping that
please
someday.
Please post one in comments if you have one.
We improvise one on the show live. Yeah. So it's stuff that is tickling our fancy that maybe the library has or doesn't have, stuff that's happening around town, stuff that the library will have in the future, etc. How can we say that in one nice little nugget?
We like it.
I don't know. But here's what's tickling my fancy. April 16th. Is the start of the Nashville Film Festival. And last year, for the first time, my partner and I were like, you know, are we going to go to this or not? Like, and we're like, well, you know, it's on a school night every night. It's going to be hard. And we just said, screw it. And we went every night. And it was amazing. It was seriously one of the best artistic experiences I've ever had in Nashville. There were these awesome movies that hadn't been released in Nashville ever. A few of them hadn't been released anywhere yet. Throughout the rest of the year on this podcast, I talked about some of the movies that I saw there, and I recommend that you go. Just super great. I mean, for us, we see the late night movies, so it's always like weird horror stuff is usually what we see, things that are bizarre, but that'll be happening all this week. Nashville Film Festival, you can go to nashvillefilmfestival.org to see the schedule and what's happening.
Is there anything you're looking forward to?
Yeah.
I leave the person that I go with work that out, and I'm told what I'm going to. And I'll also...
I was going to say, if there's some sort of horror film, that could be kind of fun to see.
Also, the people that program the film festival, I trust them a lot. So, like, the person that I go with decides what we're going to go see, and I just go and let it happen. And that is totally what happened last year, and it was great. So I was like, okay, so what's this movie? And then it was, like, amazing. And we saw local filmmakers and, you know, stuff from all over the world. It was really cool. So NashvilleFilmFestival.org, check it out. Amanda, what's tickling your fancy?
Okay, so this last weekend I decided to get sick, and it was very exciting. And so I had my own little film festival. So I have to say that we talked about a bunch of comedy films a couple weeks ago. I don't know, whatever, how many weeks ago the comedy podcast was. So I watched Ruthless People. And I can't say that I finger quotes laughed, but it was, okay, enjoyable. And that was Jeremy's pick, I think. And then I tried to watch Ruling Class, and I made it 15 minutes, and I threw it out. Don't bring me
down!
That movie's great. High fives, man.
That movie is great, one of my favorite movies ever.
I made it to the end somehow, and I've regretted the 3 hours that I spent ever since.
I made it to the cave-in as Jesus, and then I'm like, that's just creepy. I couldn't do it. So then I switched out and I started to watch. I don't know how I found out about this. Who knows how I find stuff? But there's a TV show called Make It or Break It that is about four girls that are gymnasts that are training to be U.S. Olympians for the. I think it came out in 2012. It started in 2012 because they're training for the 2010. They're training for the 2012 Olympics. And so I started to watch that and I totally got wrapped up into it, and it's very good.
It's on ABC Family.
Yeah, it was on ABC Family. And so the library has the first volume of the first season, and so now I'm totally addicted, and all the other copies are missing. I need to get our cataloging people, our collection development people, to buy all the rest of them that we used to have, but we don't have any more, because I have to find out if they win the gold or not. It was good. Make It or Break It if you need some kind of... It's kind of like... I talked about Bunheads a while ago, and that was kind of like Four Girls in Ballet Land on ABC Family. They canceled that show because they couldn't afford Sutton Foster anymore. So then they moved it to gymnastics. And now we have four girls from Gymnastic Land with no big name star.
And I recommended the middle band that was on ABC Family. So we're calling their back catalog.
Nice.
We'll be next. We are the Millers or something.
My turn now?
Yep.
All right. Well, sticking with movies, I recently watched The 100-Foot Journey. If anyone hasn't seen it, we have it at the library.
In the south of France, her restaurant had no equal.
Last night, we served this in this restaurant. The cuisine is not an old, tired marriage. It is a passionate affair.
Until one family...
Papa, slow down. Stop!
Whoosh!
...stirred things up.
I want to buy this restaurant.
Bonjour. This is private property.
Excuse me, do you own this property?
No, no.
Oh, that means you are trespassing too.
100 feet across the street, the restaurant has a Michelin star. The President of France dines there.
Can Mr. President order murgh masala, cooked the way Hassan cooks?
People here don't eat those things.
They have never tried. Now they shall.
We open Saturday night. My son is the best Indian chef in Europe. Raise your hand. Don't feel shy.
Don't raise your hand.
Raise your hand, Hassan. I'm talking to you. Begin. Yay.
Is it a wedding party over there? A funeral. The death of good taste. If your food is anything like your music, I suggest you turn it down.
I will turn the music down, but I will turn the heat up.
You don't know when enough is enough.
Enough of you.
Papa, relax.
What do you mean relax? Spoiled the whole game.
The restaurant is her entire life, ever since her husband died.
I can clean my own wall.
The outer wall is not your wall. I know, because I had a clever plan to have it built very high so nobody could see your restaurant.
Madame Mallory knows in just one mouthful if a chef has the potential to be great.
Madam, I would like to make you an omelette.
up there like a queen or something.
You flatter me.
You seduce his mind with your tasteless sauces.
That is called subtlety of flavor, and that is what he will learn in my kitchen.
Is he as good as I think he is?
He's better.
I added some spices.
Why change a recipe that is 200 years old?
Maybe 200 years is long enough.
We are ready, we are young, we have nothing to fear.
Did you read the book?
I did not.
Okay.
No, but I loved the movie and it made me incredibly hungry. All this food, Indian food, French cuisine, it was good. It was a really good movie.
So I think I like the movie better than the book.
Speaking of books, the most popular book right now, which is the reason why I went out and bought my own copy, is All the Light We Cannot See. Very popular on the best-selling fiction list for New York Times. I have not finished it yet. I do really love it, and I recommend it. It is also dense, just like Amanda's book. But it is a well-told story during World War II of a young blind girl and a German officer, a young boy as well. So
is that a young adult book officially, or is it it's a regular adult?
I think it's regular.
I believe it's
regular.
Adult.
Yeah, I don't think a teenager could last in that book. But yes, recommend that book as well. Music-wise, I will be going to Rites of Spring at Vandy next weekend. First time ever, but I'm excited because Portugal the Man, which if you listened to the last time I was here, I referenced that band. Young the Giant, Chance the Rapper, Lone Bello, a few other people that you've never heard of will be there, but it'll be fun. So yeah, tickets I think are $50 for a weekend pass.
That's not bad for a whole weekend.
Definitely not for 2 days. I'm lucky, my mom works there, so I got them cheap. Yeah. But yeah,
know people who know people.
Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna throw another festival at you guys real quick. Forecastle Festival in Louisville is the weekend of July 17th through the 19th. Tickets are $184, but mind you, that is 3 days. That is the festival I predict to be one of the best this summer outside of Bonnaroo. My Morning Jacket, Sam Smith, War on Drugs, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Modest Mouse. Check out the website. You'll see the rest of the people there. So that one, I think, is kind of worth your money. The last but not least, if you've heard of the band Moon Taxi, just throwing this out there, totally saw the lead singer upstairs on the third floor on Monday. He was here. So, yeah, if you're a music geek like me, you would have freaked out as well. So that's me. Mike?
I live in a windowless room, so, you know. Oh, look, it's Sammy the Spider again.
He's my favorite.
Oh, will he get Felicity the Fly someday? I thought I'd talk about two things, both dealing with the Wild West Comedy Festival. If you're listening to this the day it plops, Wednesday, the week from now, the Doug Benson is hosting the Benson Interruption of Footloose, at the Belcourt Theater. Could be fun. Him and a bunch of other comedians are going to sit in the front row and make fun of it the entire time. I don't know if it's going to be the remake of Footloose or the original one.
The original one is funnier.
So, and then on Saturday the 18th, the Belcourt is showing Airplane, quite possibly my favorite comedy movie of all time, with a Q&A afterwards by the Zucker Brothers, two of the three directors. As of this taping, tickets are still available. Surely I must be joking. I am not joking. And stop calling me sure.
Corrections! You may have noticed it sounded like it was recorded in a closet last week. That's because it was.
I sounded fine, so that's all that counts.
The soundproof booth that we record oral histories in, that we crash from week to week to record our podcast, may be closed this summer due to remodeling, and we will have to record in a closet all summer, so prepare yourself.
Traveling podcast
listeners.
Yeah, I was about to say, they could play some R. Kelly.
that could be the new theme song. Right?
Yeah. Part 28.
This isn't a correction, but it's an omission. If you're interested in the Battle of Milliken's Bend or Linda Barnacle's book, she has a blog where she keeps updating her research. It is, are you ready? Milliken'sBend.com. I linked to it in the show notes last week, but we didn't talk about it during the show. So MillikensBend.com to keep up with Linda's research on that very notable Civil War battle. Mike, you said you had corrections.
I have some corrections for things that I said. Number one, Mexico is not overseas. Number two.
I'm kind of down below biasy.
It's across a river.
Yeah, you know, it's close-ish. There's a Gulf of Mexico. Garibaldi didn't do everything single-handed to unify Italy. He's one of a group of Italians like Victor Emmanuel and Cavour. Also, at the time of the Civil War, Italy was not unified yet. Wah, wah. I mentioned an entire unfinished manuscript, which didn't make any sense. Apparently, the story that I heard is that Stieg Larsson has a completely finished fourth millennium novel that the estate wants to release, but Stieg Larsson's partner does not. She feels that he would have not have approved of the way that he was edited. Like, for example, she hates the Girl Who title motif that the English language versions adopt. So that's not the book that will be published this year. The book that will be published this year is written by another guy. And that's about it.
All right, so more information and all the published Stieg Larsson's Girl Who novels, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
And what's next week?
Musicals.
Musicals.
They'll be great. They'll be fab. You'll have the whole world on a plate.
We can make it there. We can make it anywhere. Dun, 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 dun.
Turning back. Guess that's why it's called the running track. Yeah, I'm going.